April of this year marked the bicentenary of Napoleon Bonaparte's exile to Elba. It prompted renewed reflection on the excitement and strain of the decline of an empire. Through art, it's eminently possible to chart the rise and fall of the Napoleonic dream. Artists were ever eager to capture the various guises of Napoleon and his changing status. Conqueror, peacemaker, politician, humanitarian, and hero. Plenty of paint and ink was spilled in the effort to mythologize the little corporal, said Boehm. They even adorn him with divine attributes. Napoleon allegedly summoned the painter Jacques-Louis David in 1798 to martial visual practice. It was the first of many demands made by the Corsican upstart. You must understand that my brother Napoleon takes an interest only in pictures in which he counts for something, said his brother Lucien. It is his weakness, but he has no objection at all to being in the limelight. In the main, Napoleon and David enjoyed a mutually beneficial artistic and political alliance. There was tension, though. David never felt he received the laurels and plaudits as Napoleon's painter. He was acutely aware, too, that Napoleon was more attracted to the chromatic romanticism of David's pupil, later his nemesis, Antoine-Jean Baron Gros. Furthermore, David didn't approve of Napoleon looting Italian art treasures and felt that he lacked artistic taste in general. A chief exponent of neoclassicism, David's works adhere to that Winckelmann paradigm of calm nobility and grandeur. But, as Kenneth Clark argues, in every classicist there is a romantic struggling to get out. Napoleon provided the catalyst for David's sojourn into romantic emotion, but it was always marshalled by archetypal classical austerity. David's works embodied the stoic virtues of Republican Rome. They chimed with the Napoleonic imperial programme, a duality of desire to ape antiquity. In effect, David became painter advocate to Napoleon. He was the propagandist image maker of the soldier of destiny. He encapsulated the early ambition, that energy, and the optimism. According to Clark, he also caught that insatiable urge to conquer and to explore. Study of unfinished head. David first painted Napoleon in 1798. Napoleon is still general at the time. Here he's young, in his late 20s, and he turns to the future in a manner reminiscent of a Roman emperor set in stone. But he is also a dashing, Byronic romantic hero, a swashbuckling soldier of emotion, with the unknown military malaise mapped out in front of him. David summarizes his features in a painterly dash of patriotic colour and an ephemeral pose. The artist had to make do with a bust for a model, as fidgety Napoleon only posed for 3 hours. The portrait remained unfinished, a metaphor in a way for Napoleon's military career at the time. Successful as David's Napoleonic works are, some say they lacked the empiricism of the battlefield. Unlike the perhaps more avant-garde Napoleonic image maker Antoine-Jean Gros, David avoided the battlefield. He never accompanied him on it and never depicted it. Gros exerted a more profound impact on the next generation of French painters, including Géricault and Delacroix. They were drawn like moths to a flame to Gros' Rubensian bravura and fecund emotion. Together, they were to subsequently launch the Romantic Rebellion. Napoleon Crossing the Alps of 1800. This is a masterpiece of classical technique and romantic emotion. The theme is man against nature and the impossible journey that lies ahead. There is the battle of the elements and ungovernable natural forces. David endeavours to immortalise the moment when the general takes control of his charger, Marengo. He optimistically points forward towards the glacial backdrop while his footmen are relegated to a subordinate position beneath him. Commissioned by the King of Spain, the work captures the conquest of Italy by the French for the second time. Napoleon and his troops cross the St. Bernard Pass across the Alps to retake territory seized by the Austrians. In the way of carefully conceived propaganda, the artist elevates his patron to the realm of deific dimensions, calm and mounted on a fiery steed. Allegorically, he is emulating Peter the Great of Russia and Marcus Aurelius of antiquity. This is, in idealized form, the nigh-on impossible journey of the Carthaginian general Hannibal of 218 BC and Charlemagne. Their names are inscribed in the rock and fossilise the endeavours of those former Transalpine conquerors. The reality was somewhat different. Napoleon actually crossed the St. Bernard Pass on a mule borrowed from a local. He wasn't leading his men either. He was being led by a Swiss peasant, and his troops were some days ahead of him. The weather wasn't elemental. It was fine. The dramatic, chiastic composition pertains geometrically to the symbol for a battle, the configuration of two crossed swords. David's son posed at the top of a ladder in the full battle dress supplied by Napoleon's valet de chambre. In the interest of equestrian authenticity, David also had Napoleon's favourite grey Marengo horse delivered to his studio. Napoleon is portrayed replete with gold-trimmed bicorn and holding a Mamluk-style sabre. The horse's breastplate, or cuirass, holds the signature of the artist. The image is idealised and aggrandised. Napoleon is wearing a cape, not his usual great coat. David needs an excuse to portray flying drapery reminiscent of Nike of Samothrace. He's evoking victory. But there is a bare hand, no gloves. Napoleon is therefore a peacemaker, not a conqueror. Realism has been abandoned for political iconography. Napoleon's face is youthful and in the guise of the Apollo Belvedere, in the aesthetic of the beautiful ideal. In 1800, there was a bout of assassination attempts made on Napoleon's life, hence David's timely equestrian effigy. He immortalises the diminutive general as an egalitarian leader and soldier of emotion. As the writer Chassot put it, this painting depicts triumph over every imaginable obstacle, warding off the very elements and transcending nature itself.